Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
Welcome back, everybody, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Tony Black, and I'm delighted to once again be joined by a fellow podcaster who was on a couple of episodes earlier in the season, Mr. Matt Lamborn.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me back.
It's a real pleasure. Yeah, I promised people, I said I hope we get you back for later in the year, and I've delivered. I consider myself a man of my word.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate to be invited back. I really enjoyed the last two that we did, so always willing to get stuck into some more Series 1 stuff.
Well, cheers. It's great to have you back, and I think you've boxed clever here because I think this is one of the better ones. Because today we are covering the 17th episode of the first season of The X-Files, and that is EBE.
From the trucker's description, the shape he fired upon could conceivably have been a mountain lion's.
Conceivably?
The National Weather Service last night reported atmospheric conditions in this area, which were possibly conducive to lightning.
Possibly.
It is feasible that the truck was struck by lightning, creating the electrical failure.
It's feasible.
And you know there's a marsh over there. Those lights the driver saw may have been swamp gas.
Swamp gas?
It's a natural phenomenon in which phosphine and methane rising from decaying organic matter ignite, creating globes of blue flame.
Happens to me when I eat Dodger dogs. How can a dozen witnesses, including a squad of police vehicles in three counties, become hysterical over swamp gas? I've investigated multiple sightings before. Chesapeake Bay, the Okoboji Lakes, Area 51 in Nevada. None had this much supporting evidence. Anecdotal data, exhaust residue, radiation levels 5 times the norm.
Mulder, none of that evidence is conclusive.
The only question for me is, why was the truck driver singled out?
Isn't it more plausible that an exhausted truck driver became swept up in the hysteria and fired upon hallucinations? I mean, after all, the road can play tricks on you.
Yeah, it can play tricks on me. Not like this.
EBE is, as I say, the 17th episode of the first season of The X-Files. It first aired on February the 18th, 1994, and was written by Glenn Morgan and James Wong, and directed by William Graham. The story, in brief, is that after a downed UFO crashes near Iraqi airspace, Mulder and Scully are sent on the trail of an unmarked truck which may be carrying the UFO's occupant. Matt, then, this is well known among a lot of people as being a quite well-regarded episode. Where would you rank it out of 10?
This is one of the real meaty establishment pieces of season one, and I really enjoyed rewatching this again on the whole. Really brought back a lot of fun memories where you're really get into heightened moments of excitement in terms of what may or may not be revealed. So it really works on a multitude of levels, this one, in terms of the writing and what you do and don't see in it. But I would rate it as high as an 8 out of 10. It's a really fine episode, this one.
Yeah, 8 out of 10 is what I would go for, to be honest. It's an important episode, really, for The X-Files, because it is the... I think you could class this one as the first mythology episode. And the mythology hadn't really been figured out by this point. You know, Chris Carter and his team were really just... They were still, you know, coming up with ideas that link back to aliens and the overarching story of Mulder's quest. But they hadn't really figured it out, which is why there's an inconsistency in many respects with all the different alien episodes in season one that the later seasons don't have. But this one, I think, is the first time that a lot of the mythology pieces start to come together. The only absentee, really, is probably the smoking man in this. The rest of it is pure mythology.
Yeah, I think it actually works for the better that he's not in it, though, because one thing that I particularly enjoyed about rewatching this, that perhaps didn't occur to me the first time I watched it, is it really puts the first seeds of doubt into your mind about what the intentions of Deep Throat actually are. You know, paints him in a slightly more negative manner than he's been revealed to be in some of the episodes leading up to this, which I found quite intriguing. So if we had just a cigarette man leading them down a dead end, it wouldn't be so much surprise, but because it's Deep Froze, it makes you very curious as to what's going on and uncertain about how you should be feeling towards this otherwise shining light in Mulder's quest, if you like. But now things are a little darker, a little murkier than they were before.
Yeah, they are. And we'll get onto this as we go further into the episode, but yeah, it does muddy the waters with Deep Throat. And it just muddies the waters in general. You know, Morgan and Wong talked about how they'd like the UFO stories, but they wanted a chance to do one, and that they wanted to add that element of paranoia and conspiracy theory into the texture of the show, which hadn't really been there with the other alien episodes. You know, you had the ideas of, you know, in Fallen Angel, you had the FBI section chief trying to shut them down, and in, you know, episodes like Conduit, you had, you know, random government agents wandering in every now and then. But there'd never really been that underlying element of there is a larger forces watching what they're doing. And this one really starts to layer that in a way that the later seasons do a lot with. So I think it's important in that, in blending the two of those together.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
Right, well, let's get cracking then. Let's talk about the episode in general. So obviously the teaser's fairly short and sweet, really. It introduces us to the UFO that gets shot down, and we're from the perspective of Iraqi pilots at the beginning. And obviously there's a big link to ultimately to Gulf War syndrome, which is interesting, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But the fact that you had Iraqi pilots, bear in mind this episode would have been made in late 1993. We're only two years after the first Gulf War. And a lot of the 90s was characterised by the tensions of Saddam Hussein and the Iraqi regime. So it's interesting, really, that you've got the military on both sides as this UFO gets shot down. The Iraqis who shoot it down, and then the US forces in Turkey on the border who are keeping tabs on it.
Yeah, it certainly adds to the grandeur of this whole sort of global event that's going on. It's not just isolated to some bumpkin woodland in the United States. We're touching significant parts of the world right on the other side of the globe. So that definitely adds this worldly experience to what's going on. And I guess that tends to make it a little bit more believable, because it's not just what's happening on our doorstep as the viewer, it's somewhere else or potentially everywhere else.
That's a good point, actually, isn't it? Because that's something that obviously as the show develops, and when we eventually get to the point of a lot of the bigger mythology stories in later seasons, you know, we'll talk about how it becomes a much more of a global conspiracy as opposed to an American conspiracy. Ironically enough, it seems to have gone the other way in the latest season, but it's the first, you're absolutely right, it's the first signs that there is the global element. Because it is a ridiculous idea that if there was going to be an alien conspiracy, that it would only involve the US. It's really Anasazi where that really starts to, the season two finale, where that all really starts to come together and apparent that it's more than just them. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's the beginning of that. But it is a very brief teaser, and I think it's probably one of the shortest, actually, I think. I think it was only just over a minute. Very, very quick. It felt like it was over before it started.
Story of my life, unfortunately.
So then we're after the credits. It's not a traditional opening into the episode, really. It starts with one of the main guest characters, I guess, the character of Ranheim, who is a truck driver who is transporting... Well, we don't quite know what he's transporting at this point, do we? It's
auto parts, apparently.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, and so he gets buzzed by a UFO, and then he takes out his shotgun, and then he sees... he starts shooting his shotgun at a UFO, and I do think to myself, well, that's got to be a bit of the most pointless thing you could ever do. You know, you're not going to shoot down a UFO with a shotgun. It's not going to happen. Mm.
And clearly not seen Independence Day, where they couldn't finish it off with a nuke and have a man a shotgun.
Well, it was before then, wasn't it? It was before Independence Day.
Yes, that's how it was.
But there were loads of films that, you know, like, yeah, you should have known better. But in the bit we do with spotting people who went on to recur in The X-Files, this was the first time we would see Peter LaCroix, I think you say his name, as Ranheim. And he would later go on and appear as Dwight in Ascension. I can't remember that character, actually, in Season 2's Ascension. But I remember him playing Nathaniel Teager in Unrequited, which is a Season 4 episode about an invisible assassin. I don't know if you remember this one. He's like a military, ex-military guy who's taking out like generals, and he's invisible.
You know what doesn't immediately come to mind, but I shall take your word for it. It is interesting how many of these actors tend to float in and out of the series over long periods of time, isn't it? And I'm guessing they do a good enough job of us not recognising it at the time. I mean, we have the advantage of being able to refer to the internet and have a look at these actors' histories and whatnot, and we can spot where the multiple appearances have been. But at the time, unless you're incredibly observant, these probably do go over your head a little bit.
I've got to be honest, and I don't mean this to sound like a swat, but I can tell now. I've watched them so many times, I can recognise when someone's popped up again in the future, and I go, ah, I know his face. And this guy also reminded me of Ryan Stiles from Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yes, I was thinking the same thing as I was watching this. That guy's really familiar. Oh, yes, it's Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah, you would think it was Ryan Stiles, wouldn't you, for a minute? But yeah, he went on to mainly appear more in Unrequited, which is quite a bizarre episode, really. It takes itself quite seriously when it's a bit silly. But we're a long way off from that one. Anyway, Ranheim's another nerdy X-Files thing is that the UFO doesn't track with any of the UFOs we've seen before or we see afterwards. It's a much more of a spherical one as opposed to the triangular ones that become, you know, part of the series lore, which we saw in Deep Throat. But that's me going into uber nerd alien territory.
Well, but that might lean towards the fact that the UFO that we're seeing in this episode is of true alien origin, and the triangular ones are man-made UFOs, which we've seen a little bit of in the new season 10, haven't we? So that might explain the subtle difference there.
It might do, or we can at least try and fit it to to work.
I'm clutching at straws here.
it works as a theory. So, yeah, obviously, that's when we get to Mulder and Scully, and there's a lovely opening scene with these guys, actually, where they're rushing to the incident scene on the hunt for this after getting, you know, the UFO sighting, and Mulder's there with his futuristic-looking scanning device, looking for radiation, and Scully's coming up with all the different reasons that this might not be aliens. You know, it could be swamp gas. And he's like, conceivably. And he just says the one word. I thought that was so well written.
Yeah, there's a few instances, and they swap it round a little bit later on as well, where Mulder's hypothesising, and then Scully retorts with, possibly. Yeah. And it kind of goes to and fro. They're both very nonchalantly dismissing each other in that respect. You know, Scully has what she thinks is the most sound theory, and Mulder's obviously drifting off somewhere far, far, far away with his own. And the two invariably meet in the middle, but much later on. But they're really challenging each other in this early part of the episode.
Yeah. And it just kind of, I think it just kind of sums their relationship up in microcosm, that whole scene, really. The whole idea that Scully's, you know, constantly trying to go, well, you know, let's not jump to conclusions. It could be this. And Mulder's, yeah, he's off on his own track, And he's like, yeah, I know what it is already. Keep talking. It's fine. it was just nicely done. There's a lot of... One thing I think about this episode is that it's sharply written. You know, it's got a little bit of extra kick to it, actually. And I would say it's one of Morgan and Wong's better scripts this episode because of that interaction.
Yeah, it certainly drives it up a notch from some of the earlier season one episodes where there's definitely a feeling out process with, you say, people trying to establish where the mythology is going or just sort of getting comfortable with the style of show that they're making. We're definitely getting to where the X-Files is much more fondly remembered, which is this dark, murky, mysterious aspect of UFO exploration. So this is where I think anyone who might have been on the fence watching X-Files up until this point will definitely be off that fence by the end of this episode and be very, very interested and intrigued as to where it is going.
Yeah, definitely. And it would be one of the episodes that if somebody said to me, give me five episodes in the first season that should convince me to watch it, it would be on the list. Definitely. So yeah, it's got some really sharp writing. Obviously, then we get the scene where we see Ranheim in the cell, and he's being questioned by the police. And there's this, and Mulder and Scully, there is this whole thing about Gulf War syndrome, and you know the lone gunman in a minute laugh about the idea that, you know, aliens caused the Gulf War syndrome, but it's it's an interesting little link to something real world, isn't it? Because obviously Gulf War syndrome was very much in the press and the news at this point as a real, you know, post-traumatic thing and that people, that soldiers were going through and stuff like that. So it's an interesting thing to track back to, isn't it, to connect to the real world.
It is, and as Mulder alludes to in the conversation he has with the lone gunman, he says that there's been lots of sightings, or I think it was with Scully, I beg your pardon, where he says there's been lots of sightings of UFO during wartime, and that gives people in power a perfect cover to start using experimental aircraft during time.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Sounds of warfare, tactical advantage that they can just dismiss the use of that as something extraterrestrial, perhaps, or even the other way around. Oh, it's just us using new wartime technology, whereas in fact there might be UFOs drawn to these combatic environments. Who knows? But yeah, it's certainly an interesting link there to a real world problem that we have with Gulf War syndrome.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a feasible thing to actually tether to as well, and it obviously, you know, it gives them a little bit of extra depth to the episode. Obviously, you know, they speak to Ranheim, and then I really like the way the police chief actually in this just, it's just the when their investigation's being blocked, it's the way he just says, just go away, as if to say, I am in so much shit if I let you stay. You know, there's such a sort of sense of exhausted fear, I think, in the guy's voice. He's only got like one line, that guy, or something, one, two lines, but he's really good actually. He gets that across very well.
Yeah, I agree. And he puts it across in a tone where normally Mulder, at least, would really go after him and try and explore as to why, but he actually leaves it to Scully, who asks why in this one, and they both just get shot down so very quickly, and they just move on, which is slightly unusual. There's normally like a running duality with Mulder and Scully and the local law enforcement, but they just get on with it very quickly in this one, as they know there's bigger fish to fry.
Yeah, definitely, and I think it's a testament to how the storyline the storylines are actually evolving a little bit, in that they've done that a few times in season one. You know, and you do get that obviously in later seasons. There's always at least one person in each season that he rubs up against in law enforcement. But it's good that they don't dwell too much on that, because there is a lot more story, and they are doing a lot more that's personalised in this. And obviously that then leads them to, you know, when they get shot down by the law enforcement, they go, you know, underground, as it were, and that's where we meet the lone gunman for the very first time, which is a quite a classic little iconic scene, I think, with the gunman, their introduction. And it's perhaps one of the most memorable.
Yeah, it seems strange watching this again and going this far back that the lone gunmen were actually involved, because they're quite a cutting edge addition almost, when you consider how far ahead of the curve they are in regards to what have become more widespread and well-known conspiracy theories, and then the development of the Tad O'Malley character in the most recent series, of course. These guys really set the tone for it, and whereas Tad O'Malley, he wears a suit and he's acceptable, he's saying the exact same stuff as these guys, yet people are buying it, which is kind of akin to what's going on in real life with stuff like Alex Jones at InfoWars sort of thing. Yeah. There's a mainstream audience for this stuff now. People are just into it, whether they believe it or not. Whereas these guys were kooks and a bit weird and a bit geeky back then, but they're just doing exactly the same thing. But because they didn't have an internet,
yeah,
there's somehow a problem.
Well, I was about to say that, in that, you know, if they'd have been around 10, 20 years later, they would totally have had their own internet sort of channel or whatever, or YouTube channel, and you'd have had them coming on. And yeah, absolutely. It's spot on. They were quite cutting edge. And dare I say, they actually come across a little bit more cool and hipster in this episode than they end up being in the show. In that, you know, they're a little bit more laid back and, you know, quite not knowing. And then as the show goes on, they become a lot more like comic relief. In a good way. I mean, they're never... The gunmen, I don't think, wherever they appeared, really, they were bad. They were always great fun because they didn't overuse them. They just used to pop in every now and then. So, but they did get much more comic foil later on. Whereas in this one, they do seem like sort of quite knowledgeable, hipsterish, cool gatekeepers. If a bit like, you know, underground, grungy and rusty. But they
seem a bit authoritarian, you know, particularly with the example of how the government using money to trap people that they show to Scully. As an example, it's almost like we know more than you, and Mulder respects us, not the other way around.
Mm, exactly. Which, when you know, it's that's slightly perhaps. Well, there's an interesting explanation for why that is when we get to Unusual Suspects in season 5, which tells the backstory of how Mulder met them and things like that. Which is, you know, they put an interesting spin on why he feels that way towards them, which I'm looking forward to doing one day. But. You speaking of that money, though, I'd have been well annoyed if that had happened to me when Byers rips that note. I'd be like, hang on a minute. Yeah, I need that 20 quid.
Yeah, I'm sure Mulder would have sorted her out, no problem.
Oh, I hope so.
It's his trick. But without digressing too much away from what we're discussing at hand here, did you ever watch the spin-off of the Lone Gunman?
Do you know, I haven't watched... I've only watched the one episode, much to my shame. No, I haven't seen all of them.
Did you watch the first one, the pilot, where they crash into the World Trade Center?
Yeah.
That's some dark shit.
Very, very strange. Yeah.
And that actually came to pass. That was very, very odd.
Because it was like a few months before, wasn't it? Or something like that as well. It wasn't long before it actually happened
I think it was about a year before it happened. Yeah.
Very, very odd. Very, very spooky, really. Spooky is a good word.
There's more weight to the character of the lone gunman than initially meets the eye.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, we will... I might have said this before in previous episodes, but eventually when we get there chronologically, we will do the Lone Gunman on the X-Cast. We will go through the episodes. So, yeah, we've got the gunman coming and giving them some crucial little bits of information that sort of help them push the plot along, which they were always very good at doing. You know, they were always good at giving Mulder and Scully a little bit of a push towards where they needed to go. And then... they're back at the FBI, and after Mulder says a great line, again, an example of the good writing where Scully's saying, you know, is this plausible? And he says, I think it's remotely plausible someone might think you're hot.
Yeah, I love that. That was very, very funny.
It's great. It's one of those great little bits of flirtation that's very throwaway. But then Scully obviously finds the pen with the bug in, and it's the first example. You know, they have a really good conversation later on, Mulder and Scully, where, you know, she says, you know, we're in the Federal Bureau of Investigation, HQ, and we're being bugged. You know, what does that tell you? And it's that they've never really had this before. You know, Mulder was aware of this level of surveillance and this level of paranoia. And that's his world. But it's the first time Scully really, I think, comes into contact with this in this way.
Yeah, I think it's a good mechanism for getting Scully to start to buy into more of Mulder's theories, because she can see there's clear evidence that there's higher powers at work, and it's not just Mulder's paranoia that's taking him down this path. So I think it plays a very important part in getting Scully on side to what's going on in Mulder's head.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's, you know, it's got lots of... Another thing I really like about this episode is that when the way Morgan and Wong write it is that they put a lot of little extra paranoid ticks into there. You know, things like Mulder picking up a phone and there's just a couple of clicks on there, and then someone puts the phone down, or, like I say, bugged pens and the counterfeit strips in the money. It's lots of little things that, you know, are a little bit old-fashioned for their age now. And would be updated, and were indeed updated to an extent in the new series. But they are very much, you know, on that level of government paranoia and surveillance. And I just like the way they were adding those things in to build up that tension. So when we get to the point where Mulder's basically ripping apart his apartment, you know, to find these things, you really feel like that's earned.
Yeah, it's not just the dark seeded parts of his imagination that's making him do that, like it might have been in previous instances. He's got an absolute justification for what he's doing, and because Deep Throat is alluded into the fact that they can still hear him at one point, he has to go through every splinter of wood in the apartment to find where this last bug is, to absolutely confirm that there's someone trying to veer him in the wrong direction, or at least prevent him from finding the truth in this particular instance.
Absolutely, yeah. Obviously, that's the point where we get to see Deep Throat for the first time in the episode. And after Mulder puts the light in the window, which, I, you know, to sort of be his... It's almost his bat signal for that, you know. It's a precursor to the more famous X in tape on the window, which was season 2 onwards, which is one of the most iconic things in the show, obviously, when he eventually has another contact. But... yeah, it was a good scene with Deep Throat, because one thing that struck me was, even though he gives him the file and gives him the context with what's happening with the UFO, he's very reticent to say anything, isn't he, Deep Throat? He's like, you know, you're going on a dangerous path, and he doesn't really want to say much more.
Yeah, he's not giving away the whole story here. It's like, I'm going to give you a crumb and you've got to go find the biscuit.
Mm. Yeah.
And he's relying on the fact that Mulder and Scully are, as he says, quote-unquote, excellent investigators later on in the episode, and that you give them the slightest shred and they will pursue it as far as it will go. So, and this is where Deep Throat is particularly careful about the particular crumb that he's offering them and which direction it's going to send them.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the key thing, really, in that one thing this episode also plays with is just quite what Deep Throat's motives are, as you mentioned earlier. And, you know, he's giving Mulder things, and then him and Scully are going off and finding out about Ranheim and his real name, and being that he was former special ops, and that he may be transporting the UFO across the US in that truck. And, it you know, he puts those pieces together, but then he gives Mulder the UFO picture, which, you know, and leads him down a path, which is importantly not necessarily the... It's a question of whether or not he was genuinely trying to throw Mulder off the scent, or he's trying to get him to where he needs to be by making him... Well, he says that line, doesn't he? That a good lie is placed between two truths.
Yeah.
Which is a really interesting way of putting it. But there's still an ambiguity to it, which I think is really good. And the script doesn't necessarily give that away even by the end.
Yeah, and it just adds to Mulder's confusion. He knows that he's got to pursue something, but he's never 100% clear on what it is he's going after, which direction he should be going in, which for the first time is really going to test his relationship with Deep Throat, who he's up until that point unequivocally followed and trusted completely up until that point.
Well, he thanks him, doesn't he? At one point he actually says, look, and he really quite, in a slightly awkward moment actually, he thanks Deep Throat for everything he's done and everything he's given him so far. And
yeah,
the way Deep Throat reacts is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because this is something that I picked up upon twice at least during the episode. There's that particular instance where they're both standing in the doorway and Mulder gives him this really sort of overly convoluted thank you, and Deepthroat just has this massive smug look on his face and gives him a weird sort of glancing look and then departs. And he does the very same thing at the end under similar circumstances. So it's almost like, oh, you're thanking me, but you wouldn't be thanking me if you knew what was really going on.
Well, what struck me was that at the end, there is an element, I think, of Deepthroat having got what he wanted out of this, really. But in I think Mulder genuinely catches him off guard when he thanks him, because I think, obviously, what Mulder doesn't know at this point is quite the extent that the conspiracy goes into his own family. And obviously, we later learn that Deepthroat was very much a contemporary of his father and was involved in, presumably, in what happened to Samantha and all this stuff. And I just got the sense that there's an element of guilt in his response. It's just, I don't think Jerry Harding for one minute was told all this stuff, because I don't think they figured it out in the writer's room. But the way they said to him, just play it as if you don't feel like you deserve to be thanked. And or maybe he interpreted that from the script, because that's kind of what I got from it. I think he feels guilty because he knows that he could just tell Mulder everything he needs to know, maybe where his sister is, that his dad was involved in all this, and he can't do it. That's kind of what I got from that. I don't know about you.
I personally thought that that particular interaction was one of smugness, almost just to say, okay, I've got you now. I know you'll do anything I say, which is further weight towards the fact that Mulder starts chasing every little shred of information that he gets out of Deepthroat during this episode, which takes him on a wild goose chase for quite a bit of it until Mulder and Scully start working things out for themselves.
Yeah, it's a good alternate view looking at it. It's a testament, really, to the acting and the script that you can have both those interpretations, and they're both, I think, equally strong. So it's really good that they've got that there. But yeah, obviously the photo that he's given him about all the UFOs and around the place in Georgia that Mulder's convinced is real, and you get a nice, you know, conflict between him and Scully when Scully's going, well, hang on a minute, just, and he's like, why can't you just believe this? it's very much a case of, for fuck's sake, Scully, you know, just for once, we've got something here, we've been given something, and she's going, hang on a minute, no. Don't believe it, hook, line, and sinker. I thought that was really good, because you can see the both sides of it very well.
Yeah, I think the writing of this desperately needs that, because Mulder's prepared to go to the ends of the earth to follow any information he's getting from Deepthroat at that stage, whereas any normal self-respecting person is going to go, hang on, why are you giving me this? Why should I believe everything?
Yeah.
And if the whole conspiracy as a whole is as dark and mistrusting as we've been led to believe it is up until this stage, there's no reason to think that this isn't part of that. And that's where Scully perhaps enforces her own paranoia onto Mulder as opposed to the other way around for once, which is quite an interesting conflict, I think.
Yeah, I think that's true, that's the case. She wants, you know, she started to see all this surveillance, and she's a little bit like, well, just hang on a minute, because you know she turns to him and says, you don't know who this guy is, you know, and he says, look, he's given me all this stuff, he's legit, and she says, you don't know, she says, you're the only one I trust. And that's the crucial nub of it, really, that he's getting too, and this goes to your interpretation of that moment with him and Deepthroat, in that he's got Mulder, and it very much goes into that, really, when you think about it, in that Mulder's been hook, line, and sinkered. But Scully's the one going, wait. And that's why he needs her. That's why that's the whole point of the show. That's why he needs her, because she's the one who can turn around to him and say, these people may be playing you.
Yeah, if Scully wasn't there.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And it was just Mulder on his own. He would have been made to have looked like an idiot many times already by this point of the series, but her bringing him in line and getting him to look at things slightly rationally, even if he wants to go down the route of the fantastic more often than not, typically gets them onto the right path. So her intervention at this point is crucial for them to getting onto the right road.
Yeah, and I think that's another strength of this episode in that, you know, by this point, the point of Scully and the point of the relationship is well established. But this is a really good episode for reminding you of that, reminding you, like you've just said, that she's such an important part in his own psychology and the way he does things. And if she wasn't there, then yeah, he probably would just be, you know, discredited or even dead. And it's an important thing to remember. Obviously, though, this is the point where he realises that he's been had and that Deep Throat has intentionally thrown him off. And you get a really great scene in the aquarium, which I thought was a really nice location to have this. It's quite atmospheric and atmospherically shot.
Yeah, they're there having this meeting in front of a tank full of sharks, and it gives you this sort of overwhelming... It's just like a pointing at the fact that Mulder is a fish in a tank full of sharks, essentially, yeah. Isn't he? And he has to be very careful which sharks he dares swim with. And we know at this point that Deep Throat is the only shark he can swim with and trust. But even a shark you trust could bite every now and then, which is essentially the situation that we find ourselves in. It's the first time that Mulder's been bitten by this contact. And now, for the first time, he's actually questioning whether he's been made a fool of all along.
Exactly. He's starting to doubt everything. And when Deep Throat turns around, and, you know, you get some... This episode gives you more hints into Deep Throat's psychology and reasons, if what he's saying is on the level, than any other. You know, he kind of... You know, later on, you get the moment with the EBE tank and stuff, but... In this, he basically says, you know, I've been party to some of the worst lies and things that you wouldn't... I think he says no crazed man could imagine. And it's, you know, but he says, there are some things that you're not meant to know, or that I can't tell you, even if it's just at this stage. But to do that, just at the point where Mulder's completely sort of in love with him in that sense, is a real blow. And I think it's, you know... That's what sends him off to search his apartment and find a bug and set them off on the course that they need to play them at their own game, really, which is what they do with the very espionage-y sequence where they're losing their trails, which I quite liked.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that bit where they're at the airports, they're booking their flights in cash, so the transactions can't be traced using... telephones, grabbing taxis instead of renting cars. They're really having to fly under the radar just to get a sniff of where the trail actually goes with this lost shipment that they had in their hands right at the beginning and just let it go.
Yeah.
And now they're having to move mountains just to try and get back on the right track.
And that's the thing. When you look at the actual, necessarily the plot of the episode, it's actually fairly thin, really. In terms of their investigation, you know, it's that, yeah, they try and they get wind of UFO sightings, they've got the truck and ran home, and then you get the whole midsection is really all the to and fro with Deep Throat and the paranoia and everything, and then it spools back to the actual plot. So it shouldn't work as well as it does, actually, but I think it's the writing and the characterization that actually makes this episode, carries it forward really well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did think, though, I don't know about you, some of the trails, the tales that have been put on Mulder and Scully were terrible. The guy who was after Scully, he was the most conspicuous guy in the world.
Yeah, exactly. He looked like he'd just come out of a Louis Vuitton shop. He had this big, over elaborate scarf on. Yeah, I'm just going to start looking in the window. Oh, this is a tax office. It's not a shop. Shit. So he couldn't be... Yeah. Stand out more than he did, and And even if Scully was trying hard, she would have probably spotted him even if she wasn't. And she manages to elude him just by jumping into a taxi. You know, there's no like car on hand ready to pick this guy up. He has to actually try and flag down his own cab and can't do it. So that's him out of the game straight away. Yeah, totally inept. Absolutely rubbish.
He's terrible. Can you imagine him having to go back to his gaffer and say, how long were you training at? 30 seconds. How did she escape? Did she get, you know, picked up? No, she... taxi. she just took a cab? Yeah. He just looked like he was a rent an extra from The Sopranos. You know, he was in the wrong show. Yeah, so there you go. They get away, and they manage to finally track the truck down, and then they get buzzed by a UFO. There was a great... I really like the effects here, the way when they're getting buzzed by that UFO, there's like sparks in the car as they're going through, and then, you know, what presumably is like frozen time or whatever. I thought that was a nice sequence. It was brief, but it was good.
Yeah, they always do a good job of adding drama to these instances in the first season where they're experimenting with this concept of lost time whenever a UFO might be present. We see it right at the beginning of the first series, and it really comes to the forefront again here. And it's just about believable enough for it to have an effect on the viewer. It's not... Again, it's more what you don't see rather than you do see that makes it so powerful, and certainly works for me.
Definitely. Obviously, they find the truck and it's empty, and Mulder thinks that they've been had again, and that it was an elaborate trick. And, you know, if you want to look into it and retroactively look at things, you might suggest that this, whatever buzzed them, wasn't actually alien, that it was one of the man-made government ships that actually threw it, because he doesn't find any radiation. It doesn't seem to be the same kind of phenomenon that was picked up earlier when Ranheim shoots at that UFO. So it seems to be something trying to throw them off again. And that's interesting, in that Mulder immediately goes, well, now he's got this idea of being watched and surveilled, that he's like, well, maybe this was all a trick. You know, smoke and mirrors again.
Yeah, certainly seems that way. And given how the episode sort of plays out towards the end, it would make sense that they're in the vicinity of where this cargo needs to end up. So once they realise that Mulder and Scully are onto them and pursuing the truck, they stage this UFO event with the bright light and the potential loss of time, which doesn't actually occur in this instance. And then they actually take the cargo out of the truck, sort of park it across the road to block them off so that Mulder and Scully check it out. And then they've actually taken the cargo in a man-made UFO back to the hydro station, which is where the episode actually ends.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a really interesting timeline of events there. Because it struck me how the truck is parked facing them. So yeah, it does look very stage managed, doesn't it? You're absolutely right there. But again, it's not spelled out necessarily in the script. You know, there is that element of that you put those pieces together, and Mulder puts those pieces together. And I suppose there's a little bit of plot contrivance in that he basically rings around a few, like, you know, MUFON, NICAP kind of places, and then finds a link to get him where he needs to go, but it's just about works.
Yeah, it's clutching at the shortest of short straws, but it's just enough information out there in the wilderness just to get you going in the rough approximate direction. And lo and behold, you find someone who gives you the right piece of information that you need. Good old X-Files writing.
Yeah. And in this case, a UFO nut who is, you know, right next to the power plant, which is handy, really.
Yeah.
That was quite fun. But it gets them to where they need to be and gets them through the door of the base. Did you notice the names of the... and this could have been a quiz question, but I thought I'd actually mention it. Did you notice the names of their aliases as they go into the base?
Braidwood and Step Off.
Yeah.
I don't particularly get the relevance of that. Are you going to tell me?
They are basically the names of the two first assistant directors on the show, Tom Braidwood and Vladimir Stefoff. And Tom Braidwood obviously also plays Frohickey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Tom Braidwood, that's the thing. I don't know if everyone would know, but Tom Braidwood would have been there for the entire, well, certainly the first 5 years at least, in anyway. You know, even when he wasn't playing Frohickey, he was there because he was in a first AD. So he was always involved. He was part of the crew. So yeah, that was a little wink to those guys, basically.
So he technically called up his own assistant director to make him a fake ID. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, not bad, is it really?
Yeah.
So yeah, they're getting into the base, and they just you know, ambling around, and then you get the military officer, played by Roger Cross, who later went on to be in 24, and he's one of those guys who pops up in shows, but he captures them. And I do like the fact that Mulder's about to bullshit, and Scully goes, just stop. We're FBI. she just said, we're FBI. We're not, you know, we're not supposed to be here. I know we're not supposed to be here. Let's just cut the shit. That made me laugh.
Yeah, it was a little strange. Every time I watch that, I almost expect her to do something different. Hang on a second. I'm a janitor or something. I'm meant to be here, God damn it. But no, she goes down on the absolutely legit route, as Scully always does and should do. And that provides Mulder with his opportunity then to get away.
Yeah, to do a runner. We get some nice Mark Snow kind of music, you know, all these synthetic action-y kind of thing. Which
that
I
was really
like.
Good.
Thank you. been studying. And then he races. He takes a nasty trip, doesn't he, though, over the that sign, you know, that sort of hazard sign.
Yeah, I love that, because that's exactly what I would have done. Rather than walking slow towards it and stepping over it, my lanky self try and hurdle it and end up going flying. Yeah. So I like that they put that in. And of course, that also adds to right at the very end, where he can't quite get to the window of the pod that we're going to see, doesn't it? Because he's got a limp.
Exactly. There's a few things there. The first one is that it's kind of underlining that Mulder isn't a traditional action hero, you know, which is something that the show was always... He never got too sort of good at all that. You know, yeah, he could fire a gun and he could chase people down and he could throw a punch every now and then, but he wasn't... He was more cerebral 9 times out of 10, and which is why, you know, when he has a big scrap in the latest season, it didn't really seem like Mulder, really, because
it's a bit too Bourne Identity, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a bit Jack Bauer, and it's like, well, he's, you know, he's not that guy. So him falling over, he's a bit ramshackle sometimes. Him falling over something while he's trying to run, yeah, it fits well, and yeah, he's ambling then towards the container that's supposed to create the EB. It's a great shot, though, isn't it? When he's trying to get there and, you know, the officers are going, stop, with their guns. And it's like, you're just thinking, oh, no, what? He's just about to see, like, whatever. And you feel it. You know, feeling.
Yeah, you really feel he's got this life or death choice. I can see it and die.
Yeah.
Why I have to stop right here. Yeah. And because he's got a limp, he can't get away.
He can't do it. It's
he's
great.
He's got no options.
It's really nicely staged. Although, I don't know if you noticed, but I kind of thought, I don't know if you saw the set involved in that power plant, but it looked very B-movie to me. There were like these big sort of like Tesla coils and things like that on the set. I just thought, maybe, I don't know if that was intentional, but it did look a lot like a sort of 50s B-movie kind of set design.
Yeah, and you know what it kind of reminded me of was actually, you remember the beginning of Goldeneye? Where he's trying to escape from that plant and he ends up like shooting those barrels and disappears on the conveyor. So, this is a bit grey, kind of looks a bit like that. But yeah, even that though is probably meant to look like a B-movie set, so mission accomplished.
But yeah, Goldeneye was after this, so maybe Goldeneye took a cue from this.
That'd be nice,
that would, that would be good, yeah. But no, that's a good point. Obviously, this is where then we get what is effectively the final scene, where Deep Throat comes in, as Mulder's surrounded, and he just goes, let him go, it's fine. And this is the point you realise he's got a lot of power, because he can just say to, like, some serious military guys, just, see you later, I'm fine.
Yeah, it's the first time we've seen him aligned with what we kind of concede as being the evil side, isn't it?
Yeah. You can tell he's a big boss. And obviously, this was before we knew about the Syndicate, which he would have, you know, if he'd have survived, he would have been there in those Syndicate meetings that we see later on in the series. You know, he was obviously a key player in all that. But yeah, it just shows that he's got a lot of power, and then he tells Mulder about the whole idea of how in 1947, after Roswell, there was the contract signed by all the major countries about that whether they would kill an alien creature that crashed. And I think that's, you know, that plays on a lot of genuine real life, you know, theories about the Majestic 12 and Project Blue Book and all these things that were set up, supposedly existed under Truman, and all this stuff about how there were secret groups formed. And to me, it's a plausible idea, actually, that there would have been a secret conference and they would have said something like that.
Yeah, well, this would fall in line with more modern conspiracy theories that would probably come out with the Tad O'Malley character about world government.
Yeah.
And it's never expressed as world government at this early stage. But that's essentially what we're dealing with here. And I think this is one of my favourite scenes of the whole series, this closing aspect where Deep Throat really gets everything off his chest, gives away his motivations for helping Mulder entirely, reveals himself to be a much darker character than he initially comes across as almost a guardian angel type. And he still is, but he's more of a full-on dark angel, if anything. Yeah.
Do you think he's telling the truth then? Do you think, because obviously, you know, in Musings of a Cigarette Smoking Man in season four, we actually see what he tells Mulder here, and we actually see that moment where he kills that alien creature. But that's very much a fantasy potentially episode, and it's not necessarily the truth. But do you think that's true?
It comes across as entirely plausible. Just to pick up on the mood of the episode as a whole. Now, I did believe it. It sounds like this is a man who's deeply troubled by what he's seen, what he's experienced, what he's done. And even at this point, he's venting and getting everything off his shoulders, but is still leaving quite a lot behind. He's not unburdening everything onto Mulder, just enough to get him to understand the complexity of the situation they all find themselves in.
Yeah, I am inclined to believe him as well. You know, there is the idea that maybe he's feeding him a story in order to contextualize this, but I don't think so. I think it's true. I think he's crossed to bear, and one of the reasons that he comes.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
To Mulder. And yeah, it really does. Like you said, Fallen Dark Angel is a really good way of putting it. And funnily enough, I meant to mention earlier how at the end of the episode Fallen Angel, you get the suggestion that Deep Throat's actually playing Mulder and that he's not necessarily a good guy. And this is effectively the follow up from that, really. And so that gives that episode title another context.
Yeah, it does. It's amazing when you just start scratching the surface, these things, these multi-layered facets that go on and makes you really appreciate the complexity and the depth of the writing involved. I mean, we're taking little pokes at Chris Carter's overarching mythology, and he's just about establishing it by this point, but perhaps we're not giving him enough credit. Perhaps, like you say, with Fallen Angel, there was more to it than we initially thought, there's something deeper there.
Maybe. You know, even if it is just a lucky happenstance, it works. So either way is good, really. But then we get the great final moment where, you know, he says to Mulder, he says, what are you thinking? And he says, I'm wondering which lie to believe, which is a great final line. And then he gets that look, doesn't he? He gives him that look to say,
The same indeed. Look he gave him at the door earlier on, and I'm just like, you bastard. You absolute bastard. Like, I've got you again.
Yeah.
He's like, as long as you believe something, I've always got you. And that's where Deep Throat needs him to be. He needs him on a leash, but prepared to chase. That's something that Mulder's always going to do.
And I don't think we see Deep Throat actually now until the finale, if I'm right. I don't think he crops up again. Yeah, because there's only about another five or six episodes, I think, until the finale. And I'm pretty sure this is the last time we see him before the Erlenmeyer flask.
Mm.
So it's a good, you know, tee up for the finale and what happens there. And it has that final, brilliant final shot of him walking away into the mist where Mulder, you know, Scully sees him from a distance because she hasn't met him properly yet. She doesn't until the finale. But, you know, it's great. It's a really cool shot that just underlines the mystery of the guy and that there's still the big question mark as to, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Is he somewhere in between? Mm. And that question only really gets answered relatively definitively in the next time we see him. So
yeah, well, that's a funny thing because the Erlenmeyer flask is a superb episode, no doubt about that, and a worthy finale for the series. But this in itself would have set up as a good season finale under any other circumstances because it has a really good cliffhanger ending that leaves you really wanting to see the next piece of what's going to happen. It's really stirred up the pot, made you start doubting certain things that you thought were established but definitely aren't now. So this in itself could have been a good season finale, and I wonder if perhaps when they first wrote it, maybe it was going to be a season finale, and before they went the route they went, maybe they were going to start the next series with the Alien Mind Flask. Whatever. Either way, it's absolutely superb. Well worthy of the joint 8 out of 10 that we've given it, and it does set things up very nicely for how the season culminates.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I agree. And I think, yeah, it does make a, if not a season finale, then a very worthy tee-up for the final act. So it's a little cracker, really. It's definitely one of season one's best, and you know, it would probably be in my top, certainly my top 50, I think, of the list of the show's episodes. So mm-hmm. Yeah, a really good one. So let's move on to a last little couple of things we're going to do. First off, I'm going to ask you the question, do you believe in, which is where I ask my guest whether they believe in the specific paranormality of the episode in question. So, Matt, do you believe in extraterrestrial biological entities?
I think it's something I can buy into in principle, yeah. I'm not saying I've seen any.
Really? There are no EBEs on the Isle of Man. I'm stunned.
Well, everyone is probably an EBE of some sort. But it's one of those, it ties directly into, do you believe in extraterrestrials as a whole? Do you believe in UFOs? And I haven't seen anything to suggest that it can't exist, so therefore I do. Do I think that there's EBEs on this planet? No.
No.
At this time, no. But it would be hard to imagine that there isn't something out there. And it would be a shame to think that we'd never encounter it, good or bad, at some point in our lifetime. So, yeah, I'm inclined to believe that there is.
What do you make of all the claims of like things like Area 51, where they took alien bodies and, you know, all the going back like 50, 60 years, all the claims that, you know, we've had crashed things like this, you know, we've had crashes and we've had alien bodies, you know, recovered and things like that. Do you think a lot of that's just conspiracy fake, or there's some truth in it?
I don't know. You have to bear in mind that these sort of things are quite pie in the sky in the modern day era of the internet, where information can get around so quickly and can be just as quickly shot down. These rumours manage to instill a certain degree of either truth or myth, depending on which way you want to look at it. Back when, just the ability to get information circulated in a small area would have been incredibly difficult, and it eventually became a worldwide known thing. And I used to tease my mum, God bless her soul, she's not with us anymore, but she was born on the day of the Roswell incident. And I used to say, you were brought to this planet by aliens, weren't you? But she always found quite amusing. She knew I was a big X-Files fan. So, yeah, I like the whole Area 51 thing, and I've watched countless number of movies on Roswell. Don't you've seen the Kyle MacLachlan Roswell movie, which is really good.
Yeah, it's quite good. Actually,
have you ever seen Fire in the Sky?
I haven't seen it, but I've heard much about it. Yeah, I know that one. Yeah,
that's the quintessential alien abduction movie, and it's got an incredibly grim alien experimentation scene, and you absolutely have to watch that. I've seen enough research to think that there's something in there, whether it is people thinking they're seeing UFOs and it's experimental technology for real, or there is actually something going on. It's hard to fake that many instances and for something to happen in the back end of America where there's hardly anybody, and eventually became common knowledge to a certain degree. You know, it's in popular culture. These things don't really happen by accident when there's no internet or easy methods to circulate the information. I mean, TV probably wasn't around at this point, or was a very early thing. So for it to get around, more people have seen it than a couple of nutters who've been on the moonshine a bit too much. So, yeah, I think it's a very interesting part of human psychology. And again, not to cliche mold it and saying I want to believe it. People do want to believe. People want to believe there's something more than people are telling them. So whether true or false, continue to want to believe, folks. It's a good thing.
Oh, definitely, yeah. You know, and you know, it's if these things do exist, you know, there have been aliens crashed on Earth, or there have been, you know, bodies found or anything like that. I think eventually the truth will out somehow. You know, whether it's that they turn up on our doorstep and everyone sees them, or they invade and they knock the shit out of us, or, you know, whatever. I think eventually, but I think these days people worry about it less, because it almost feels like you don't get as much of this conspiracy theory anymore, because, and this is something that they did in the new series and they tapped into, people are more scared these days of what the humans are doing to them than the aliens. And so you almost, you know, there's as much theory to suggest that alien crashes and EBEs were a reaction to the fear of invasion during, you know, times of war and things like that. These days it's much more about what the monsters on this planet are doing. It almost feels like there's less worry about this, which means maybe it was all just worry in the first place. And, you know, the X-Files does play with that in episodes like Redux, you know, all these different shows, these episodes that do play into the other side of the coin with all this. It's interesting, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
Well, you know, keep your eyes out. Keep watching the skies in the Isle of Man. You never know what you might find, Matt.
Oh, we've got very low light pollution here. So if there's a good place to ever see a UFO, this would probably be it.
Bingo. There you go, guys. If you want, if you're in the UK and you want to go UFO hunting, you heard it here first. That's where you need to be. So finally then, our favourite part, which is the X quiz, where I'm going to test you on 5 questions and a quote, Matt, about EBE.
Oh, God.
The last time you were on, I believe you got 3.
I did.
Okay, so this is a case of at least trying to match your score. So let's see if you can beat it. Are you ready?
Okay, let's go.
Okay. Question 1. Name the headache powder talked about on the radio when Ranheim is driving his truck that will straighten you right out.
Is it a real product or is it made up for the show?
It might be made up for the show, yeah. It sounds like it's made up for the show.
I've got no idea then.
Okay, it's Goody's headache powder. It'll straighten you right out, and you got my word on that. That's what he says.
Great.
Thanks, Goody. Okay, sorry, that was extremely hard, but, you know. Okay, question 2. Who does Mulder consider the most heinous force of the 20th century as described by Byers?
Oh, bugger. I know that this was in the conversation with one of the lone gunmen where they were talking about the CIA.
Yeah, it's quite a funny like response from Mulder.
I've forgotten. Should know that one, and I'm going to, yeah, when you say it, I'm going to go, oh, yeah, of course it was. Go on.
All right, let's see. When Byers says the most heinous force of the 20th century, Barney?
Yeah. I did giggle at that when it happened,
yeah,
as well.
It's chuckling. What is Ranheim's real name?
Is it Druce?
Well done. Yeah, I'll give you that. Frank Druce. Yeah. Which I don't think is as good as Ranheim. Ranheim's just a little.
It should be the other way around, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, now I'll give you a point for a close number for this. So, question 4. How many UFO sightings does Deep Throat tell Mulder there have been in Fort Benning in Georgia? When he gives him the photo.
100.
Oh, I don't know if I can give you the point for that. 17.
Then you can't give me a point.
I want to give you a point, but no. sorry. Yeah, 17 UFO sightings. Okay, question 5. What does the... Now, you need this to equal your score before. No pressure. What does the UFO nut, who Mulder and Scully meet towards the end, what does his garbled intergalactic space greeting say when he says it in English?
Welcome, Space Brothers.
Yes! Well, he says, hello, Space Brothers, but I'll give you that. Yeah. Hello, Space Brothers. Cool. Okay. Finally, the quote. Okay. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. If a shark stops swimming, it will die. Don't stop swimming.
Yep, so that was Deep Throat at the scene at the shark tank when Mulder is getting angry with him about being sent down the wrong path.
Yes, definitely. There you go. The quotes are always easier. because the questions are terribly hard. So
you are a bastard quizmaster. Give you that.
I know it's terrible, but you've got three. You've maintained your average. You're doing fine. Okay, 3 out of 6. Well done.
Thank you.
There you go. So maybe one day when we do season two, you might beat this.
You should see the amount of useless trivia I've written down whilst I was watching it, and you've managed to avoid all of this. I've got frequencies of radio stations, I've got plane flight paths, I've got various other spoken character names from the CIA, I had the Braidwood step-off thing, but you managed to miss all of them.
I appreciate the effort. It's all good. Your commitment to the X-Cast is commendable, Matt. So
you are the smoking man of quiz mastery.
That's the coolest, yeah, nickname I'll ever have. So thanks. Right. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode, looking at EBE, the 17th episode of the X-Files, and just leaves me to give a big thank you for Matt for you to come back on. So much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Look forward to the next one.
Cheers. Yeah, definitely. Me too. Where can we find you online?
Okay, so you can find me. I do podcasting and some writing for the Fail Critics team over at failcritics.com. If you're into old video games, check us out at retroasylum.com. We also have a podcast on iTunes. And I also do a FIFA Ultimate Team podcast at foothead.com.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. Will, we're part, obviously, of the Black Hole Media podcast network with a variety of other shows. And you can find that at Black Hole Media. On Twitter and on Facebook. We've got a group on there. You're more than welcome to join the group if you so wish. And obviously we're at the XCast on Twitter at the X_cast. We're on Facebook at the XCast, and we're at the XFcast at Gmail. If you want to email us, you know, let us know what you think of the show. If you wanted to come on and be a guest, if you're a particular fan of the X-Files, tweet us, Facebook us, email us, whatever works. We're always keen to have some more feedback. And as the show progresses, we've still got a long way to go on this journey. So, you know, we can hopefully make it better. And please do subscribe on iTunes as well, because that will help us in a big way. And if you leave us a review, awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely leave a review, folks. Helps us out a ton, and it doesn't cost you anything. So it's the best way you can repay Tony for all his hard work.
Oh, it's very nice. Thank you. Yes, that would be lovely. So I will leave that in your capable hands, guys. But yes, until next time, Matt, you'll be back. I very much hope. Thanks again.
You're more than welcome. Really looking forward to doing it again.
Cool. Cheers. And we'll be back soon, guys, for our next X-File. But until then, remember the most important advice. Trust no one.